The world is already starting to fall apart, that it's just starting to crumble beneath our feet. Kind of feels like that, doesn't it? What's causing these? What's causing these calamities? Well, if you ask the scientists, what do you think they will say the cause is? Global warming. The scientists claim that man-made pollution is causing the planet to warm up. And there's scientific evidence to validate some of the things that they're saying. Some people don't agree with it as much as others, but that is what some of the discussion is being said. We see that the ice sheets are disappearing from the Atlantic. We just read this week that tens of thousands cubic feet of ice have melted off Greenland in the past few months. It's astonishing the amount of melting that's going on. And scientists seem to say, well, global warming is causing this to happen. So to some degree, you could give an argument from an earthly standpoint. And surely we know that in our environment, what we do to the environment does play some role in what happens in our world. But what is really going on? What is really going on in our world? Are we the cause of these things? Or is there something greater that is going on that we should know about? And this is where we're going to go to find out about these things. This is where we should go for all of our answers for what's going on in the world. Turn with me, if you will, in your Bibles. We're going to start with Matthew chapter 23. Our text was in Matthew 24. We're going to start in Matthew 23 today. We're going to get a little background information today before we move forward. If you remember in Matthew 23, Jesus was speaking to a multitude of people, a large group of people that were assembled together in the temple courtyard. And among those were people who followed Jesus everywhere he went. I'm not talking about disciples, although they were there. I'm talking about the scribes and the Pharisees. They stayed on Jesus' heels more than his sandals did, I believe. It was probably Tuesday afternoon, late in the evening. This was Jesus' last day of teaching in the temple. And this was his final discourse, and he was concluding this public address. He was finishing up his talk for the day. And it was quite a conversation he had. It wasn't really a conversation. It was more of a one-sided conversation. We're going to start in Matthew 23, verse 2. 23, verse 2. And this time, Jesus is speaking here, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. And therefore, whatever they bid you observe, that observe and do. But do ye not after their works. For they say, and they do not." Know anybody like that? "For they bind heavy burdens, and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers." In other words, do as they say, not as they do. They tell you what you should do. They give you hundreds of burdensome rules. They have added a lot more than what I've told you to do. They've added a whole lot more on. But even then, they won't do it themselves. They tell you to do it, but they won't do it. "But all their works," in verse 5, "but all their works they do for to be seen of men, and they make broad their phylacteries." How many of you know what a phylactery is? I had to look it up. It's little pouches made from skin from ceremonially clean animals, sewn together in little metal leather bands by which they're strapped to the forehead, between and immediately above the eyes. So you're walking around some little leather pouch right here with a strap around your head, right here in front of your eye. How would you like to walk around like that all day? And they were worn specifically by pious Jews, but some reportedly devout men wore them all day long. They kept them on all day long. So with this pretense of piety, they make these phylacteries more conspicuous by broadening the band. So now you don't have this, you got this broad band, so it's kind of really noticeable on your head. And Jesus had a few words of criticism to say about that, severely. And he also said they enlarged the borders of their garments. They had a little color around the bottom of their garment. They made them a little bit bigger, so made them a little more obvious for people to see. "And love the uppermost room at the feast, the best seats in the house." You know, if you've ever been to a concert of music of a orchestra or something, and they got these nice big boxes in the top, the best rooms. Well, they wanted the best rooms in the house. And they had them at the feast, and they had the chief seats in the synagogue. You know, they were right up front. Matter of fact, there's plenty up front if anybody wants to come, you know, take the choice seats. And greetings in the market, to be called of men, rabbi, rabbi. They like teacher, they say, teacher, yeah, yes, yes, I am. Thank you very much. Yeah. They liked to be seen and bragged on. It made them happy. That's what they lived for. So right off the bat, Jesus has given him a severe finger wagging already. He's scolding them right in their own church to their congregation. I don't know about you, but if somebody came up to me and I was up here and somebody came up to me and started chastising me in front of the whole congregation, I can somewhat feel how they would feel. How do you think that those scribes and Pharisees felt that they were sitting there all proud and pompous? Probably not too good. So he was wearing them out. In verses 13 through 15, he tells them, "But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." Verse 16, he calls them blind guides. You heard the blind leading the blind. In verse 17, he calls them fools and blind. So we get the picture. Jesus is not happy with the leadership in his church. And throughout the rest of the chapter, he continues this. "Ye serpents, ye generation of vipers." And then he says in verse 37, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets." He's talking about them still. "And stoneth them which are sent unto you. I send you a message to you and you stone them. How often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. Behold, your house is left to you." How? "Desolate." Christ's words struck a nerve in them. It brought horror to them. When Jesus speaks to you, and he speaks to you with heavenly authority, and he's chastising you, you know it. And they knew it. But if you had anybody say something to you that you didn't want to hear, husbands, have you ever had your wife say something to you knew was true and you didn't like it? And you sit there and act like it didn't bother you. You kept a stiff upper lip and you just... Am I the only one? He wore them out and they act like it didn't bother them. But inside they were trembling. They knew what he said was true. As a husband, I hate it when my wife says something like that and it's true and I know it. And I don't want to admit it. Husbands, more often than not, take this for what it's worth. Your wives are generally right. Shan's not here to hear me say that, so I can get by with that now. I know. he knows what I'm saying is true as well. He gets the same thing I do. So. But they pretended they didn't care. But this unseen danger surrounded them. You know, what if this temple, this beautiful edifice that we have here, what if what he says is true and it's not going to be anything left of it but a heap of rubble? What if that is actually true? So they had this yuck in their stomach. You know, you get this feeling, this harbinger of evil. You know something bad is going to happen, but you don't want to believe it, but you get this ugh in your stomach and you know, well, what if it's true? And this temple was made of the purest marble, perfect white. They said when you could see it from with the sun shining out, like a beautiful snow-capped mountain, you could see it from miles. It's a beautiful building. And the stones, the dimensions of one stone, 66 feet long by 7 feet by 9 feet. That's a big rock. That's big. A portion of it was so strong that even it withstood part of the siege of Nebuchadnezzar's army. And they were so perfectly cut. I don't know if you know any stonemasons or people, but they were so perfectly cut that when the building was built, it looked like one solid stone. It was so perfectly hewn together. You couldn't slide a piece of paper between one of them. You couldn't even see the seams. That's how precisely this building was. And so they couldn't imagine, including the disciples, how these walls could be breached, let alone be knocked down like a house of cards. You'll try pushing a 66-foot stone, see how far you get with pushing it off another one. But as Christ beheld this temple, he saw something different than what they were seeing. So you can imagine what Jesus was thinking as he looked upon this building. He thought, you know, the disciples had come out and told, you know, look at this thing. And Jesus said, yeah, these buildings are wonderful. This man did a superb job on this building. I can't knock the craftsmanship of this. He said, but in his mind, he was seeing this dreadful fate that awaited this magnificent structure. He said, yeah, in himself, these buildings are wonderful. And you point to these walls as apparently indestructible. But listen to my words. There's a day that will come when, quote, there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. You're talking about the temple here. This could have had you put to death by saying something bad about the temple. This was the religious structure. This was the means of salvation coming through this temple, and you're telling me that it's going to be destroyed? A corporate gasp. And a large crowd had heard the prediction, not just the disciples. But when they dispersed, and Jesus was alone, with four of his most trusted disciples came to him. He was sitting upon the Mount of Olives, and they asked him, in Matthew 24, verse 3, tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? Two questions. They thought the event of the temple being destroyed would happen when? At Jesus' return. They thought that's when the temple would be destroyed and Christ would return. But instead of answering the question separately, the destruction of the temple, which in reality was Jerusalem and his second coming, he mingled these two events, the description of them, together. He mingled them into one idea. See, if he told the disciples the future events as he saw them, it would be more than they could handle. This was something big that's coming down the pike, and he knew they couldn't handle it. And so what he did, he blended the meaning of these two huge events together so that they would have to study out the meaning for themselves. Would you like Jesus to tell you everything's going to happen? Be honest. Sure we would. That's the easy way. Why sit there and have to figure out all the things in Revelation? He say, okay, look, this is what it means. I kind of look at it this way. When you go to the grocery store, and you in the middle of winter, and you go and you want some tomatoes, what are the tomatoes like in January and February? Hothouse. Kind of pinkish, pithy, kind of grainy, not a whole lot of good taste to them. But you have the food there. Now in the summer, early spring, all of a sudden you decide you want to go out and you want to plant some tomatoes. You go out there and you work and you sweat, you till the ground, you get the weeds out, you put all your fertilizers and things in, you plant the plants, you nurture them through the upcoming weeks. You fight the bugs, the caterpillars. You know, you give them, you know, you go organic like I do. You got to feed the animals. That's just far for the course. But you work hard, you sweat, and at the end of summer, you got some, what do you have? You got some beautiful, red, ripe, juicy, meaty tomatoes that are good. And so you've worked hard, and you appreciate what you have for the work that you have done. It's the same with the Word of God. Now, I'm not comparing him just giving us the answer as to being a pithy tomato. I mean, he gives us some of the answers. He tells us things, but he doesn't tell us everything. But when we get in and we dig in the ground, we, We work the soil. We study, and he reveals these things to ourselves. We come up with this luscious fruit that comes from the study, and we retain it better. He knows that it's good for us if we dig in and study for ourselves. And so he didn't give them all that information. He wanted them to get in there and study and to learn. And he does that for us as well. We need to be in here prayerfully studying this word, because he will reveal to us things that we never would have imagined had we not got in and studied for ourselves. So Jesus turned to the disciples and he said to them, "Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, 'I am Christ,' and shall deceive many." And Christ's words were soon to be fulfilled. Between his death and the siege of Jerusalem in 70 AD, there were many false messiahs that came up and appeared. But this warning was also given to us for our day and time. He warns us that the deceptions that were used before the destruction of Jerusalem will be practiced again at the time of the end. So we continue reading, "And ye shall hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." During that time before the destruction of Jerusalem, men struggled for power. What group was in power at that time? What world power was in charge of the known world at that time? Rome was the ruling empire. And if you were an emperor or a leader in Rome, a Caesar, you had better watch your back, because people were looking to be the next Caesar. Ask Julius Caesar about that. He had a good friend named Brutus. That didn't turn out too well for him. You didn't turn your back on people. You didn't drink out of a chalice without having somebody taste it first. They were looking for any chance to take you out. Are there wars and rumors of wars today? You had to turn on the news. But that's not it. There's more than just that, Jesus said, if that wasn't enough. "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places." In 44 AD, there was a great famine. We can read about that in Acts chapter 11. And between 31 and 70 AD, there were a great number of very large earthquakes that happened at that time as well. And there were numerous wars. But Jesus said, all these are the beginnings of sorrows. Wow. Sorrows can also be translated as birth pains. Let's think back. Okay, we're going to do an analogy here of 31 AD and 2019 AD. And we're going to compare it to a woman in labor. Now, women, you understand this much better than we as men do, but you know, we have a working knowledge of what it means. But you've been pregnant for 9 months. Okay, I'm about 6 months, okay. But you're walking around Walmart. You're trying to walk till you can get something going. All of a sudden, ooh, you get this kick in the belly, this terrible, ugh. And you realize that it's that time. Now, when this happens, how often does this happen, these pains at first? Every 10, 12, 15 minutes, but they happen. And the first one is a good little jolt. And then after about a couple of hours of this, what starts happening? They get a little, ooh, a little harder. And they become a little more frequent. So the intensity kicks up, and the amount of time in between each one happens. The same thing happens in our world. In the time of Jesus, It was like the beginning of sorrow. The birth pains were beginning. The initial pain, the contractions were not so close together. But as we come through the centuries and get up to 2019 AD, I dare say the baby's crowning by now. Our earth is in labor today. Here's a graph I took from the past 100 years. It's talking about the seismic activity, earthquakes on our planet. You see at the beginning, it was kind of hard to see here, but it begins down here at about 1900 and comes all the way down here to this line right here to about our time right here. These are the earthquakes that happened between to about 1920. You see they had some, but there were not a whole lot. But look what starts happening as we're going towards 1950. You get the intensity increases tremendously. Then after 1950, look what's happening here. And these are all, this is the intensity, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6 intensity earthquakes. So all these you're seeing here are from 6.00 on the Richter scale up. So these are not just little tremors you feel on the ground. These are noticeable earthquakes. So you look right here, a tremendous amount. We've had 13 earthquakes already this year, big earthquakes. Here's another graph that I found that talks about the natural disasters that have happened, different to things in the earth. Look what's happened since 1970 through 2018. This includes volcanoes, wildfires, landslides, earthquakes, drought, floods. Look how much things have increased in just 40 years. Make that 50 years. In the book Education, we read this. It's a little bit of a quote, so it'll take me just a minute. Education, pages 179 and 180, we read this. That time, speaking of the end time, is at hand. This was written back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And we're told then that the time is at hand. So we're looking at, you know, well over 100 years that have elapsed since then. That time is at hand. Today, the signs of the times declare that we are standing on the threshold of great and solemn events. Everything in our world is in agitation. Before our eyes is fulfilling the Savior's prophecy of the events to precede his coming. Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. The present is a time of overwhelming interest to all living. Rulers and statesmen, men who occupy positions of trust and authority, thinking men and women of all classes have their attention fixed upon the events taking place about us. I mentioned earlier that we sent out Bible study interest cards. July 25th was the day that the order was placed. In less than a week, 12 people had already responded. Why do you think that people have responded so fast? They are searching. They're looking for something. They see. They're looking in the world. They're seeing all this craziness going on. And they're thinking, Lord, you know, God's going to have to do something or something getting ready to happen, you know. They have a distorted view of what's going on in the world. They want to learn more. What is going on? Maybe the Bible has the answers. And so they're looking for answers. And they're looking to us to give them their answers. They are watching the strained, restless relations that exist among nations. They observe the intensity that is taking possession of every earthly element, and they recognize that something great and divisive is about to take place, that the world is on the verge of a stupendous crisis. Angels are now restraining the winds of strife that they may not blow until the world shall be warned of its coming doom. But a storm is coming, ready to burst upon the earth. And when God shall bid his angels loose the winds, there will be such a scene of strife as no pen can picture. The Bible and the Bible only gives a correct view of these things. Here are revealed the great final scenes in the history of our world, events that are already casting their shadows before the sound of their approach, causing the earth to tremble and men's hearts to fail for fear. And Jesus goes on to say, and many false prophets shall rise and deceive many. Are there false prophets today? Remember this guy? Some of us may not. Jim Jones. Anybody remember who he was? Yeah, he took a group of people, a group of down to Guyana, French Guyana. He had his little cult following. He says up here, if you can read it, he offered salvation at an unthinkable cost. Jim Jones was the cause of many people going to their death by drinking cyanide-laced Kool-Aid. Here's another one you may remember. David Koresh. Quote from him, "If the Bible is true, then I'm Christ." Quoted directly from him. David Koresh was head of the Branch Davidians, an offshoot division of the people we see around this area, the Shepherd's Rods. They were a group that came from them. David Koresh had left the Adventist Church and decided the prophecies in Revelation pointed to him instead of Jesus Christ. He was the second Messiah. Jesus was the good Messiah. He was the sinner Messiah. It wasn't long until they were all destroyed in a fire. Marshall Applewhite, remember him? Marshall Applewhite, he had a group of people called the Heaven's Gate cult. They believed that a comet, the Hale-Bopp comet, which was going to pass by the Earth, was going to be hiding a spaceship that was going to bring them all up to the spaceship and enlighten them. And so they all got together and they took some medication and some alcohol and put some bags over their head and some fancy Nike tennis shoes. I never got that part of it. And they died there in a room following a false prophet. And what about today? Sylvia Brown, psychic to the stars. She recently died, but she was a well-known psychic who many stars went to her for advice. Instead of searching where they could have found the true answers, they were searching to false prophets. And we have false shepherds in the world today in our churches. Many of them are preaching prosperity. Many of them are reaching out ecumenically to Rome. This is not the only one out there. There are many false prophets. This is Pastor Kenneth Copeland. He's one of the evangelical leaders of today who has gone and has made inroads to making evangelical relations with Rome and other churches. It's a very big thing, but he is not the only one. We have many out there. But this is just an example showing that we have people who are leading people astray today. In the prophecy of Jerusalem's destruction, Christ said, because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. And what? And then shall the end come. This prophecy will be fulfilled again. The abounding of iniquity finds itself again in today's world. Do you see the world full of iniquity today? Do you see the love of people waxing cold? How much love do you see in the world today? The prediction in regard to the preaching of the gospel is for our day. Before the fall of Jerusalem, Paul was preaching, and he said in Colossians 1:23, by the leading of the Holy Spirit, that the gospel was preached to every creature which is under heaven. The gospel had penetrated the known world at that time. It had gone from a group of 12 followers to 3,000 people to cover the known world in a known amount of time. That's why Rome was so scared of them. They grew with such rapidity. The gospel spread in a short time. So is it going to be again before the coming of the Son of Man. The everlasting gospel is to be preached to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. Revelation 14 tells us that. What do we find in Revelation 14? The three angels' message. Who are the angels in the three angels' message? Is it a terrestrial being flying in the clouds saying, "Fear God and give glory to Him"? Is that what it is? Who are the angels? Who are the three angels? We are. We are the angels. We're messengers. Angelos translates as messengers. These are not angels that are going to come do this, folks. This is us that's going to be doing this. If we believe the three angels' message, then we are those three angels, and we got a work to do. We got a message to spread. Paul tells us in Acts 17:31 that God hath appointed a day in which He will judge the world. Christ tells us that when that day will be ushered in. But He doesn't say that all the world will be converted. He never says that. What does He say? He says the gospel shall be preached unto all the world, and then the end will come. He didn't say that everybody's going to accept it, but everybody's going to hear it. When the three angels preach with a loud voice, it means people are going to hear it. It's going to be worldwide in its scope. It's in the heavens. People are going to hear it. That message is going to be spread. And we're told that by giving the gospel to the world, it is in our power to hasten our Lord's return. Let me repeat that. By giving the gospel to the world, it is in our power to hasten the Lord's return. Do you understand what they're saying? What's being said there? We are the holdup, folks. We have a work to do, and we have not been doing what we're told. We're told not only to look for the Lord's coming, but to hasten the coming of the day of the Lord. Had the church done what it was supposed to in times past, the Lord would have already been here. I'm thankful that they were lazy, because if they weren't, we might not be here today, folks. But it's in our power. We have a charge to go into all the world and share this message. So let's tie this together. We were told by Jesus what to expect before He returns. He said, expect false Christs. Do we see those? Wars and rumors of wars. Famines. Do we have famines? Pestilences? Earthquakes? I thought about pestilence. I was just reading about Ebola the other day. They're saying that they're having trouble fighting it from the Congo to another country. It's getting almost where they can't fight it. You see the amoeba, the brain-eating amoebas. You see all these crazy things that are happening that you never heard of before. All of a sudden, all these crazy things, these pestilences, these earthquakes. Iniquity, do you find iniquity in the world? Spiritual coldness. Call yourself a Christian these days, and what do you hear? That you're a bigot, you're a hater. Imagine that. People that spread a message of love are considered haters. We have all the things that they had in the apostolic days, except in a much greater number. So if that's the case, if all these things are happening that Jesus said was going to happen, why are we still here? Why hasn't He come yet? What's the holdup? Verse 14 of chapter 24 tells us, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So folks, as I said a minute ago, we are the holdup. Apparently there's still some people who need to hear the message of the gospel. There's some people out there, it's hard to believe with our world the way it is, with electronic communication, that at the click of a button you can have all the knowledge of history. There's still people who don't understand it and have heard about the good news of Jesus Christ. So what's the holdup? Let me ask you a question. Who wants the Lord to come soon? Raise your hand if you want the Lord to come soon. Keep your hands up. Do you really want Him to come soon? Okay, keep your hands up. Wait till I finish reading here. Wanting it isn't good enough, folks. It takes doing something. If we're holding our hands up, that means that we're telling God, we want You to come. That means we're going to do what You ask us to do. You can put your hands down now. I mean, you can leave them up if you want, that's fine, but it takes effort to spread the gospel. It takes time. The hardest thing we have to give up. I remember I used to, before I had a change of heart with ministry and in my days of laying around watching television, you know, with the wonderful advent of DVR. Oh man. I wouldn't go there. That was good. And I would lay there and I would watch Ice Road Trucker after Ice Road Trucker, hoping to see somebody slide off the road. I admit it, everybody watches those shows, want to see it. That's why you watch it. I would spend hours laying there. Time would go like that. Shannon come up and say, you know, you'd like to study with me? I said, well, yeah, you know, I've got a couple minutes till the commercial's over or whatever. And that was it. So much time I wasted. It could have been doing the Lord's work. I said, I don't have time for this. I don't have time to study. I don't have time to do Bible studies, to go out and pick up the phone and call somebody. I don't have time for that. But I had hours to lay in front of a television, wasting my life away. I said, yeah, I can put some money in the offering, you know, pay somebody else to do it. It takes a lot of prayer. I didn't waste my time praying for people. I had better things to do with my time. I mean, the new year was coming out with these shows. I had to watch them. So much time wasted. But I'm not going to waste it anymore. That's why we're doing what we're doing here. That's why we're sending these interest cards out. That's why we're reaching out to people. That's why we want to reach back out to people who have fallen away from our church. We have people who have come in these revolving doors here and gone out. We bring people in series. We love them into the church, and they get in here, and we forget who they are. And so as quick as they come in, they say, I don't care. These people don't care about me, so I'm not coming back. It takes time, effort, money, prayer, commitment. It takes people. You know that 80-20 rule? 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Those numbers have changed, folks. It's more like 95-5. Seriously, we don't take the Great Commission seriously to go into the world, to teach people, baptize them. We don't do that. We say, here is It Is Written's website. Go there, and there's Bible studies right there. You can do them right there online. You don't have to see my face. Easy. We don't want to put the work in. But folks, those who put the work in are going to be the ones who are in the kingdom. In the upcoming months, we're going to be doing some things. And what are you going to do to hasten the Lord's return? We have Bible study cards. We sent out a mailing a while back. We've been doing some by mail, but we have probably 10, 12 cards from that previous mailing. We got 12 cards in this mailing. There's 25 people who are interested in Bible studies right here in Chatsworth in a 10-mile radius. That's not including the ones that are getting ready to come in. We even got one, how this guy ever got this card, I don't know. But it's from a prisoner asking for Bible studies from the mailing we did. And I didn't mail to any prison. But somehow this prisoner got it, and he wants to have Bible studies. So the Lord is reaching people in ways that we don't even have any idea how he's going to do it. He is wrapping this up. And he's waiting for us to do what we can do right now. In a couple of months, we got an evangelistic series coming up. Me and a couple people cannot do this on our own. It's going to take a church to do this. We have people that are going to be coming here, and they're going to come in this building, and they're going to come in, and they're going to see people here, and they're going to see a handful of church members. And they're going to think, well, if the people don't care about this, why should I? Do we care? The opportunities are endless how we can reach people in the world. I just mentioned a couple. There's so many different ways. You can see somebody on the street and just give them a glow track. You can just stop and pray with somebody. You can, so many different things that we can do. And what's even better is we have people that are coming to church next week that are good. If you say, you know what, I don't know how to do this, we got you covered. John and Karen are going to be here, and they're going to start doing some real methods of how we're going to reach people. And they're going to start setting up days to come out here to this church. They're coming all the way from Chattanooga. They're going to come out here. They're doing it at Ranger right now. They've been coming out on Monday, Tuesday nights, training them to do Bible studies. There's 10 Bible studies going on at Ranger right now. Three of them are in-house studies right now. Some are mailing. One lady, they told me that she is in a wheelchair. She has a lot of dogs. She has two fences. And so she sits in between the two fences because they can't come in the house. And they do a Bible study between the fence. There's so many ways that people can reach. And we've got 25 studies here, and three or four people can't do it. The Lord is depending upon us to do this. It's time for us to be serious about outreach. And if we have Christ in our life, as we claim we do, the saving of lost souls will be our greatest work and our greatest desire. We will forget about me, how this makes me feel. Well, I'm nervous. You know, I don't think I can do it. And when we see somebody have that look, I remember my first evangelistic series when I did my first altar call. Somebody came up and they had this sparkle in their eyes, this smile, this, you can't describe the feeling that you get when you see somebody who has just learned about Jesus. And you get that when you do a Bible study, you reach these people, you become friends with them, and you see them grow, and all of a sudden you say, wow, this is what we are here for. Who else can I go to next? And when we do that, it's not going to be long. The Lord's going to say, this message has gone to all the world. God already has angels working on the hearts of these peoples. When these studies have gone out, when these letters have gone out, they just didn't fall where they did by accident. Christ placed them there because somebody was looking and was searching. And so they're asking, what will be the end of all things? People are questioning what is going on. And if we don't tell them, who will? Who's going to tell them? We're told, may the Lord put the missionary spirit upon those whom he has blessed with great light. May the Lord, this is a prayer, may the Lord give no rest day or night to those who are now careless and indolent in the cause and work of God. Is that your prayer, that God will not let you rest until you start doing what he wants you to do? Don't ask that prayer unless you're serious. The last time I asked God for something to do, I ended up this job right here. And I thought it was going to be a deacon or something. He will not give you any rest day or night if you ask him. But it'll be the best prayer you ever ask. The folks, the end's near. Jesus wants us to keep that in the forefront of our mind. Time is short. We don't have much time. Those people who are waiting aren't going to have forever. It's up to us to reach out to them. So what are we waiting for? The end is near, and it will come. There's no question about it. It will come. How soon? And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. And then, and only then, shall the end